You're back and connected to Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com, and this is the week of October 9th, 2004. And my name is Rob Greenlee. Thank you for connecting with us from around the world, and we keep you plugged in to some of the latest information that's going on around the World Wide Web and the Internet and some other kind of cool software and devices.
But only if you're really good.
That's right. Well, Dana's here, and
otherwise we're going to have to smack you.
Yeah, well.
Well, actually, we have a special guest to smack.
Well, he's back.
Yes. We have in our...
That's right. It's Mick. Dick Cheney.
Mick Cheney.
No. Mick Cheney.
Yeah.
Go f*** yourself.
You must think we're on XM or Sirius Radio here.
I am. I'm sure we're on Sirius Radio. I just want to say thank you for all the folks out there who said such nice things after the last episode.
We're talking to Mitch Radcliffe. Of course, he was on a few weeks ago. And he's the one that said James Spader about 32, 33 times. But Mitch is a technology pundit, an expert at blogging, and former chief content officer at On24. And he works for Red Herring right now, writing the Now blog.
That's right.
We call that work. But yeah.
You do get paid for it. So we'll call
What's a part-time job for you, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And
3, 4, or 5.
Blogger, your blogger extraordinaire.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, Mitch is going to stay with us for most of the show today because we're going to talk about some of the cool stuff that went on and some of the concepts going on around some of the high-tech conferences that went on this past week, Web 2.0 and Chris Perillo's GnomeDex. And we're also going to talk about the growing trend of podcasting, a movement that's been inspired by MTV's VJ, Adam Curry, and what the kind of impact that's going to have on all of us as we shift our radio consumption.
Don't forget Poland.
And don't forget Poland. Well, yeah. Yeah, Poland's important to this.
I think we can forget Poland now, right?
Well,
we can.
Okay. Poland's pulling out, so Poland is pulling out.
Because past. Poland is past.
Yes. Yes.
What did they
Poland.
Say the day after the debates?
I said, we're in Iraq?
Well, frankly, Mitch, I was really disappointed in the debates because they didn't debate the issues around the survival and growth of the Internet. I think that's by far a much bigger and more important issue to debate.
Than world peace?
What do you think?
Go fuck
I'm
yourself.
Just pulling your leg, man. Okay.
You know, we've got other topics on the show this week. Before we jump back into the political fray, oh my goodness, Snap.com is rebirthed.
Gmail is upgraded.
What that wiki means. JotSpot makes the scene.
And the iPod software hits the net with an upgrade to 1.0.
Joining us also later in the show will be Doug Kay from IT Conversations. He's the host. He's the mastermind behind IT Conversations. And he just came back from GnomeDex and recording it live. We're going to find out lots of information from him.
He spent most of his time giving everybody else a voice, so I wanted to give him a voice. So listen to Doug here for a little sample of what's going to come up later in the show.
At this point, we've got about 225 programs in the archives in IT Conversations, and I'm producing about 4 shows a week. So a new visitor is somewhat overwhelmed by the volume of content. So what I wanted to do was make it so that people could find the shows that were right for them, and in fact, even keep track of what they've listened to and what they haven't. So I used the Netflix model, and I designed personal program queues so that people could put programs into a queue. They could sort them. They could check off which ones they've listened to or not, and they could actually have an RSS feed specific to their interest based on their queue.
Okay, it's time for a brief summary of the news, and we mentioned Snap.com. Got born again?
Yes, it did. It was rebirthed by a gentleman that started what?
Well, he started it before. He started
the Overture company one company he started.
Bill Gross has been around forever. He started out in games and, mm-hmm. and a variety of other businesses as well. But he brought Snap back.
Mm-hmm. Back from the dead.
Just kind of like that.
Right? He just snapped it back.
And it rose from the dead. Its grimy hands bursting through the soil.
Is there anything different about Snap? Is it same old, same old?
No, it's quite different.
Okay.
This is a mind-bending experience.
It's like Snap, the jazz fusion version.
Yes. I mean, you go to this site and you're totally confused when you go there. I mean, you do a search and it pulls up results, but I think they need to do a little bit more with the usability on this a little bit. I don't know.
I was a little confused with the usability, I thought.
Yeah.
I also was not really clear as to what to do with the results they gave me. And then, of course, they've got this idiotic deep linking policy where you can't link to a search result on their site unless you sign some sort of an agreement with them. And basically, that's going to kill this thing dead from the get-go.
Why do they think they need to do that? Do they have some sort of royalty deal going with some of the databases that they're accessing?
Well, when you get down to this thing, they talk about transparency, and they're even going to show people what their revenues are, what they're earning on different search results. And so you have to assume that if you do a deep link, you're somehow messing with their revenue structure. So
I think this is really an alpha product, not a beta product.
I would call this a pre-alpha product.
Pre-alpha product.
But, you know, with a conference, you got to have something to announce. So why not just get out there?
Well, what Mitch is talking about is the Web 2.0 conference where some companies actually came in there and announced new products,
some
new services.
Companies announced themselves.
Yeah, they did, and they got some attention. That's for
Roho,
sure.
Roho, which is a RSS sort of aggregator thing. There was
Roho?
Roho, R-O-J-O.
Okay.
By a guy named Chris Alden, who was one of the founders of Red Herring, strangely enough.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Kim Polizzi announced a new company that I can't remember what it is, but it's an open source company that's essentially going to do bundling of solutions in open source software.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of new things out.
Yeah, I tried to follow as much as I could with, you know, some of these conferences and things, but there's so much going on with them, and there's so many other things going on in my life.
You know,
exactly.
Life is going on, and yet these conferences
No,
are
it's
going
not life.
On.
It's RL. That's what you have to – it's RL.
Is
real
it
life.
Real life.
Real life.
RL.
It's RL. That's how we have to refer to it from now on, because it only allows that much space for RL.
We all need more acronyms, don't we? Yeah.
You know, somehow.
But anyway.
Somehow I just don't feel the energy.
I mean, it's not catchy.
Okay.
Yeah. It just, you know, it doesn't have zazz.
Zazz. That's important.
You got to have zazz.
You know, RL is just a little plodding, I think, for this new information superhighway to go back to the 1990s.
Really, what we ought to do is just sound – we all ought to talk like we were modems. We should be going
– Okay.
For your listening pleasure, we did beep that part, but it was basically the sound of screeching coming from Mitch's lips.
That sounded really scary, Mitch. I mean, I can't believe that we put up with that for so many years.
Can we talk a little bit about Gmail?
I would like to talk about Gmail, maybe a little bit, though.
I love Gmail.
But I'd like more noises like that, though, later, though.
Oh, don't ask.
Okay.
You don't want.
Okay.
I can only make that noise once a month.
Gmail actually upgraded their service here, and there's actually rumors that certain parts of Gmail may be monetized to generate some revenue for.
You know, in the test phase, we're not going to charge you to forward your mail, but you just get ready.
Well, they are a public company now.
Some problems. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, I think the whole idea of all these services was, you know, collect as much information as you can about the user. But if you start charging them and collecting that information, people are going to start feeling as though it's kind of a jip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how cool the software is. There's a lot of cool software out there that has shot itself in the foot by starting to charge for things that they were already extracting value in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some of these things are kind of already released, like the Gmail Notifier, a little software tool, which I've been playing with. I know Dana's got it on her system, too.
Yeah, basically, it's a little cool Weblet that sits on your desktop and says, you've got mail.
Yeah. I mean,
I have that with Yahoo Mail now, too.
That was actually a really good idea. I mean, nobody else had thought of it. I mean, there's been web-based mail out for a long time, and nobody else thought of that. So I was impressed with that.
It's important to know the very second you have an email.
That's right.
Especially when you're in LiveJournal.
Well, it's a just-in-time economy.
We're coming up on the first quarterly report by Google as a public company.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be interesting because I don't think they necessarily will be showing the growth that they have shown in the past. And while the stock is up 60% since the IPO, I think maybe that it's going to come crashing back to reality. At the very least, it may stay up, but it's going to take acts of self-delusion on the part of investors to keep it there.
What's the dollar amount these days? Approx. Like
135.
Yeah, I think it's in the
so
one,
still
one,
higher
one,
than the amount.
Yeah, it's in the 130 range, but there isn't as much buzz about Google now that after they went public. Have you noticed? There just isn't as much.
Well, now they're in the Amazon business.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Now they're searching books. Well, they can't sell the books, so what are they going to do, charge people to sell the books? What you don't get there is the kind of level of service that you associate with an Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and what they're trying to do is virtualize everything about finding products, but they're just, you know, sort of X-ing out all of the value-added services that make getting products from a particular source valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's going to work for them.
Yeah.
We're going to have more conversation in just a second. We're just taking a quick break. You're listening to Rob and Mitch Radcliffe and yours truly, Dana. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
the Web Talk Guys, here and now.
You're listening to Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's here, and Mitch Radcliffe is back with us, and we're going to continue talking about some of the latest news trends that are happening this past week. And Mitch, one of them was an announcement at Web 2.0 this past week about wikis, a company called JotSpot. And wanted to just mention that as a new company that's, I guess, got $5.2 million in funding.
Well, it helps if you start at Excite.
Well, it does. It does.
Joe Krause, the guy who founded Jot, started Excite. And I know Joe had some conversations with other wiki companies before starting this company. And
yeah,
he learned a lot, and he built a pretty good product.
Well, let's explain really quickly so everybody that listening to the show knows what a wiki is.
I don't know that I can explain it, because when I made that noise before, I think I'm going to burst a blood vessel.
Mitch, I just want to step back a second. You,
my left eye hurts, and my
well, stop.
My whole left
your finger
side of my
in
body
it.
Is sort of like numb.
Stop.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you're drooling off the left side. Fix that. Mitch, I'm amazed how much you are like a walking encyclopedia of the who's who of the internet world. I mean, you just know everybody. It's like the sixth degrees of the internet, and you know everybody's fingers.
Well, he
I
is.
I think that part just died.
Well, he is actually a wiki. Actually,
okay. What is a wiki? Tell us.
Well, I'm not a wiki.
Well, you could be a wiki. You could be, you know.
No, like, I can't wiki? Be edited by anybody at any time.
Oh, you can't.
I also don't really like the new markup language that takes. But being on the board of advisors of Social Text, which of course makes a conflict of me to say anything about anything else.
Okay. Well, that's why
I've been using this
it.
For a long no, time. No, I think yeah. these are important tools, yeah. And there are a number of different approaches to building these collaborative tools, which are based on internet protocols rather than on proprietary protocols, like we would think of Netscape, and I also would call Groove a proprietary approach to this as well, like Notes.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between the traditional wiki, which Social Text has taken a very long way and which can be edited by any participant, is that the Jot environment is basically a modular environment where you can plug different kinds of capabilities in and still use the shared collaborative environment. It's pretty cool stuff.
Well, it seems like it's like the next generation of what a weblog is, and it really takes the whole interactive element of the participation of the reader or the people that are participating on the other end. The receiving end, to get them more involved in the conversation.
Yeah, but at the same time, the reader, instead of being able to comment on the content, actually can change the content, which is the essential difference. And, you know, you can use a wiki for an authoring environment and then produce the content as a weblog. So I wouldn't necessarily call it the next generation. It's probably a different authoring
Well, it is, because, it is different, and I think for one of the primary reasons, and that is that it's kind of scary for somebody that runs a wiki to make it open to anybody and everybody to post
democracy.
Anything and to change everything, because who knows what they're going to change it to or what they're going to upload.
Yeah, well.
It depends on what the environment they want to create and how much risk they want to take and what can be deposited into that wiki, I guess.
I suppose so. I mean, if I could remember anybody's name anymore.
No, is this JotSpot?
Your name is Paul, and your name is Ringo, right?
Is this a
could be for you,
software if like, I wanted to have that? A wiki type of device like JotSpot.
Well, it's a server based system.
Oh,
Jot is going to be is basically designed for the enterprise and is expensive, relatively speaking, compared to what
model?
You have. Well, of course, companies pay a lot of money for secure shared environments.
But you're starting to see these type of environments showing up regularly on the internet, and more companies are starting to use these in a public way as well. But I think that the major use for it is going to be in the enterprise, no question about it, because it's more of a controlled environment. So anyway.
I can't wait to talk about iPodder, because this is all Rob's been talking about for the last 2 weeks.
You know, it's almost like James Spader.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's
it
the
is.
New James Spader. So 5 minutes ago, because you know, Amy's
it
are
is.
Over.
Yeah.
The new James Spader.
Well, and what I wanted to really mention about this is that there was new software that came out, and we're going to talk more about the whole concept of iPodders later in the show with Mitch as well. But the new software has come out that basically enables you to get an MP3 file from like a weblog or one of your favorite radio shows or things like that delivered to your iPod device. Automatically, it basically connects that last mile from your download to your PC, but going to your mobile device. And it's really powerful. And the software program is available for free. It's an open source that was developed by Adam Curry from MTV fame.
Adam Curry, one of my favorite DJs from back in the 80s.
Yep.
I'm so proud of him. He's got a whole new career.
Yes,
okay,
he does.
Fandom over with now. Go ahead. Pangirling.
And this software platform supports Mac and Windows and even supports BitTorrent, too. It has a BitTorrent
plug-in.
Client or plug-in built into it. So it takes advantage of the whole peer-to-peer network. What do you think about all this, Mitch? Is it?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out why I can't feel my left side.
Okay. I want to take this moment just to give somebody a... May I take this moment to just play a little soundbite from...
Yeah, I think it would be good to kind of put this in context and not talk about the technology, but what's flowing over the technology,
yeah.
Which is a whole lot of madness.
It is. And
it
speaking
is.
Of madness, we're going to play for you now a soundbite from evilgeniuschronicles.com.
Now, this would be what I would call an audio blog. It's not really what I would call a radio show, but it's an audio blog.
Yet
well,
it
now
is.
I think you're getting kind of persnickety as a radio guy. I think the thing that's happening is that the whole notion of production is changing. And so you've got people like this evil genius, Dave Schlesinger.
Mm-hmm.
Slusher. I'm not sure how he says his last name. But, you know, he just sits in front of his mic and talks for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost like a performance piece.
It
doesn't necessarily have to have bumpers, and which are the musical intros
yeah,
and exits on things.
But he has music.
Believe me, I totally agree. It's
he talks over the music.
I love it. It's yeah. So Ira Glass, isn't it? It's great. He's so smart.
Yeah.
Ira Glass or Dave Schlusher?
Oh, no.
Schlusher.
He doesn't.
I'm sorry. I'm not saying your name right, and I talked to you on the phone the other day.
He's so Ira Glass. He has
is he
the
so
persona
Ira
of Ira. Yes, he's very
okay.
much like that.
Well, he's cool. He's cool. He's
you know
got
he
a lot of
he's
good information
crazy
to say.
In a good way.
Let's have a listen.
So let's start with here. We'll just go down the list. I listened to the newest Web Talk Radio, and before I get – I thought about playing a little clip from it, but I just want to say that Mitch Radcliffe is a fucking maniac. Holy shit! God, that's all I mean, that guy's nuts. It's nuts in a good way, but he's fucking nuts. And so I listened to it, and I doubt there's causation. If there is, I'd actually be kind of flattered. But like a couple days ago, maybe a week ago, so I listened to Web Talk Radio, and I liked it. But I had a formatic issue with it because they did their first promo so fast. It was like 5 seconds in, boom, promo. And I said, you know, you should that what they should do is have some more stuff, some theme, and kind of warm people up before they start selling, you know, web.com. And there is nothing wrong with selling web.com, but just let us get in a little bit. You know, let us get our feet wet. Let people know what they're taking a break from before you take a break. And guess what? I listened to this week, and it was exactly the kind of format I was describing. So I'm imagining that they just heard that feedback from multiple people. But... So that was great, and it was actually really fun to listen to, although at some point it's always tough to know when the joke's gone on too long. I got so tired of the James Spader stuff, and I got tired about 40 minutes before they did. Mitch, I doubt Mitch Radcliffe is tired of it yet. He's probably still talking about James Spader every day, about 100 times per hour, which I didn't get a count. If I had a nice speech-to-text, then we could just do a count on the words James Spader out of that hour. But I like that show, and that's, you know, that stays in the subscription list. I like it a lot.
That was Evil Genius Chronicles. What did you think?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that it's nice that he thinks I'm crazy in a good way. And today, a more mellow, sort of stroked out day, I think I can, you know, summarize my feelings about it as I feel pretty good.
Can we
that Dave feels that way about me. Now, with regard to his criticism of the show, you know, he can go fuck himself.
Well, I think it's a fair criticism, but the only problem is that was the only show that we've done in like a year that played a promo right at the beginning.
It's war.
It's war.
All right.
No question
Dave
about
actually,
you know, I had a very a pleasant conversation with Dave on the phone the other
well,
day.
Well, Dave sounds like a terrific guy.
He's a great guy.
But we're just going to have to go to war.
You know, it's like being German and British in 1914.
Bring out the howitzers. Yeah.
Dave,
machine
come
guns.
Talk to me, David. I'm your friend. We will just talk to the two of us. Can I just address a couple of Dave's? I'll just address Dave's couple questions there about James Spader. I will take all James Spader responsibility onto myself. Mitch is not a fan. He just did that to bug me and actually to please me. And yes. It was 35 times, by the way, we mentioned that.
That's right.
Times.
Dana actually sat down and counted it after the show.
I obsessed over it a little bit, Dave.
Well, that's even been going on with the presidential debates, you know. They've been counting how many times the candidates use a particular word or whatever.
Like James Spader.
So that's exactly.
You remember last week when Bush said, don't
James
forget
Spader.
James Spader.
That's right. Sorry, Dave.
Dick Cheney was on the other day, you know, and he said, you know, I don't know how many distortions I can put up with here, but I've never – you can check jamesspader.org as to whether or not I bribed foreign officials.
Well, I'm pretty tired of the
– But
the,
you know, Senator Edwards, he's a lightweight. He's not a distinguished person. He can go fuck himself. Now that I've said it, I will remember that I have met him because I always remember a Democrat who I say, go fuck yourself to.
I'm really tired of the international test. You know what I'm saying?
I'm really tired of the whole thing.
Well,
I can't wait for it to be over.
Oh, I cannot wait to watch the next. What are you
doing? For the Democrats to have won the White House back.
Well, we want that to happen, but this has been such an entertaining election. I'm telling you, it's right.
The cognitive dissonance factor has risen beyond all legible means of conveyance. Do you not even know what that means? You see, I can't even articulate how awful it is.
We'll give you a couple minutes to articulate while we take a quick break, but we'll come back and we'll talk more about what iPodders and other things.
Well, hopefully Dave is going to post another audio blog and we'll play his response next time.
Dave, we love
hoping
you.
So.
And we can create this verbal warfare between
us. We're at war.
Yeah.
We love you in a war.
Because we
a good
think
way.
That podcasting needs
some
a
controversy.
Good war.
It needs a good controversy.
It needs a war.
It does.
We're stepping up to the plate. Be right back in a second.
It's a smackdown.
Web Talk Radio. Don't want to be an American idiot.
Don't want a nation under the new media. Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk. Totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
Web Talk is back on the air, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and we have a website at webtalkradio.com, so go visit our website. We got a blog, we have RSS feeds, we got RSS feeds with enclosures, and we're a podcaster now, of all things. I didn't know I was a podcaster until this past week.
Hey, Mitch, share with us the sudden rise of podcasting. You did it like a Google.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a little research project to try to figure this thing out. About a week ago, around the time that the podcasting thing
started.
Happened.
Yeah.
A week ago. Listen to this.
About a week ago, there were, I don't know, 18, 20 hits on Google for the word podcasting, and I searched it this week. It's late in the week because we're recording in advance of the time the show is released, but there were 11,300. That's a pretty dramatic rise. And then if you look at the number of podcast feeds that are being indexed on iPodder's podcast site, and then there's an iPodcast or there's another site.
38.
Almost. Shows. You know, there's more shows than there were James Spader's on the last show.
It's kind of a new mathematical equation. You know,
yes,
how many James
is.
Spader's per unit?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And
so we've actually seen a growth factor of more than a Spader.
1.23 Spaders.
Yes.
Per Google search.
Which I think is an important thing to understand in terms of how rapidly this self-production and self-programming, people making their own programming and choosing what they're going to listen to instead of getting what the broadcaster delivers, is going to happen. It's going to be a very big trend.
This is why iPod and trends on the internet totally rock over RL. Because, you know, RL is not moving this fast.
It still doesn't have Zazz.
All right.
I mean, you're adding kind of some attitude to RL, though. I have to
admit. When you wave your arms like that, RL is like pretty compelling.
Yes, it is. The podcasters out there, I mean, some of these are what it would term to be radio broadcasters. And I know that the distinction and that line is kind of being blurred right now, a distinction between what a radio broadcast show is and what a podcast is.
Well,
and
you could also say that in mass media,
the
line is going to be blurred very distinctly in 18 months when Howard Stern takes his $500 million fee and goes to Sirius and starts broadcasting using all of the conventions of a regular radio broadcast, but with none of the limits on what he can say and do on the air over the Sirius satellite network.
Oh,
you're going to see
you're going to see
a massive change in how people perceive what you can get away with in the sense of, you know, the rules. But that idea of getting away is really important because, you know, I mean, a few minutes ago you were getting all snarky and saying, well, you know, it's not really a radio program. Well, the thing is, it's because you've taken a lot of time to master the radio format, and so you want to sort of defend it and set it apart from the rest of the world. But in fact, what's happening is a massive democratization of the technology.
Well,
the stuff sitting in our little studio here, I know how much you paid for it because I have exactly the same thing at home, right? But we could build the same thing today and build programs for one-tenth of what we spent on this equipment.
Yeah, I'm not saying that
Skype plus software equals your own radio show.
Yeah, you betcha.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there's a good or bad side to a distinction between these two, but there is a distinction.
You're the man. You're the man, and you're trying to get on. You know, you're trying to like put your man stuff on us.
Well, yeah, I have some major man stuff going on here, so I want to defend it. You know,
the establishment now.
Oh no. No, 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 no.
No, no, no. I'm 43, but I'm not the establishment.
No, 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 no. Well, I mean, I'm just saying that the podcasting thing has caused us to evolve as a format of our show here, too, because
I like the new left arm. It's growing right out of the side of Rob's head. A lot of you can't see it.
Very fast evolution.
Yes, I'm evolving into being a multi,
pod
person.
Like the Star Trek guys with the little bumpy heads that go boom, 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 boom.
Mitch is a bastard.
You had to be here to see this. He was, you know, he's holding his baseball hat over his head and making it throb. So it was interesting. It was rather interesting.
This is what we have to take the next step. We have to get past audio and be doing video.
But Mitch, is this kind of conversation we have, is that good content?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think so?
I think people want to sit around and listen to this kind of idiocy all day long.
Oh, okay. Well, this is we're moving more to like what Howard Stern's doing.
It's better than RL anyway, any day.
Well, I wouldn't argue. I would say that recording RL is a pretty compelling thing.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, not like reality TV where they make up what real life would be like if you lived with Richard Branson, but more like, you know, people doing regular people stuff. And you find – and what's going to happen is you're going to have niche programming about things people are into. And if it's, you know, sitting around talking about technology like a bunch of geeks, they'll like that. In fact, I would have to say that the podcast list that I'm holding right here in my hand
is
dominated by technical talk.
Yes,
but
it is.
It will change.
But that's who's
pretty
listening.
Pretty soon you'll have a show with Doyle Brunson, poker guy, talking about how to, you know, build out a straight flush.
I know Will Wheaton will be listening to that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All sorts of different types of content are going to come to this distribution platform. There's no question about that. And I guess the whole model of being concerned about taking your radio show to a radio station is going to become less important. And
I would argue that when you guys stopped taking your show to a radio station, you really had a much greater success on your hands.
We've always been on the radio, though, Mitch.
Are you still on the radio?
Yes.
Then how the hell are you going to broadcast all these folks?
It's called beep.
Oh.
Dana's got a big beep button that she pushes. It's like a big red button.
See, I think the stuff that you listen to online, I mean, that's where your audience is. I know your audience is mostly online.
Yeah, they are.
But
they're,
I mean, we're sitting in a room, an extra
probably,
room in your house, and you've got an audience of a million people out
there.
Thank
you for sharing that little bit of hiddenness.
Yeah, as well.
Go search the Tacoma News Tribune for pictures of that.
We're the only show that's on this list. I'm pretty confident.
Besides
Leo Laporte, tech
yes.
guy out of KFI, that are on broadcast radio. I'm sure of it right now. Except for Leo Laporte and possibly the Linux show, but I don't think they're on broadcast.
Yeah, the
radio.
Linux show is I think broadcast on a few radio shows.
But primarily, which
so in some ways we're now up to almost a tenth of this list.
Yes, we are.
So I think that you're going to see a blurring of all these lines, and that what you'll see in response is the broadcasters actually starting to push the fringe and saying we want to start taking some of this content and putting it on the air.
Well, I think the other big piece of
and
this,
and then
too,
we will have won. We will have completely polluted the minds of America.
Where's the business model for this, though? That's the question I'm asking.
Sponsorships.
Business model because, is where it's always been. It's in subscriptions and advertising and sponsorships.
Yeah, I had this conversation today with Net Radio Sales. Basically, mm-hmm. it's a sales organization that sells spots for internet radio, and they do not value downloads the same way they value streams.
They
didn't value streams the same way they didn't value everything else.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's where they're at right now. They look at streams like broadcast.
We ought to have a war.
We should.
We ought to.
I'm riding the podium here.
I think we ought to blow up the battleship Maine, just mm-hmm. like William Randolph Hearst had done, and did the whole yellow journalism thing, and have a war, for Christ's sake.
It seems like
we're going to take down
everybody
the man.
Else is having a war.
I'm sorry.
Why can't
you're
we?
You're the man. You're the man. We're going to have to take you down too.
You're going to have to change sides, Rob.
Okay.
You know,
I've got to stop broadcasting on the radio, I guess, huh?
You're the man.
I'm the man.
And you're trying to get your man stuff all over us, man.
Well, I'm trying to live in both worlds is what I'm trying to do, actually.
Wow.
You know?
You want the best of both worlds.
I want the best. I want my foot over here and
remember
I want my
Microsoft
foot over
Bob?
Here.
Bob? That was actually what Bob stood for. It was best of both worlds.
Huh.
Well, hey, that's
where's
me.
Bob these
it was
days?
The worst version of the Windows operating system
Bob's
ever
gone.
Created.
What does Rob stand for? Because my name is Rob, not Bob. So.
Wow, that one really fell flat.
Well, I just, you know, whatever. Okay.
Okay. Do we need to wrap it up? Well, I would just want to say thank you, America, and to the rest of the globe for fighting the man.
Thank you, Mitch.
I'll never be back.
You're done now. And there's no question about that.
I'll drag him back into the studio. Mitchell might be good at his own
it,
show.
Man. Now I'm not going to be on webcasting.
Definitely be sure and tune in to...
Okay.
You can find more of Mitch Rants, a little more subdued, at...
I'm sorry, you kids just go on.
Yeah.
Do what you're doing.
A little more subdued version of Mitch can be found at redherring.com. Click on the blog, The Now. And also go to radcliffeblog.com.
Yeah.
And correspondences.org. And...
Oh, extremedemocracy.com.
Oh, is that a new one?
Hey,
what's the
is that a blog? Is that a blog?
It's a blog and all the parts of the book that are up there.
Oh.
So you can read the book and then argue about it.
And your book is? About?
Extreme Democracy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that makes
written,
sense.
Co-edited by John Lipkowski and contributions from Steve Johnson, from Joey Ito, from Jim Moore. So a whole lot of very, well-known people.
That's great.
Oh, that's exciting.
Well, Mitch, thanks for joining us again, and we appreciate you listening.
Power to the people.
That's right. All those hundreds of thousands of people that are listening to our show, we certainly appreciate
Fight the power.
All those listeners, and we hope to have you back with us next week.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Maybe. And maybe Mitch will show up again next week. I'm not quite sure, though. Yeah. I would like him to come back again.
I'll bet.
Okay.
And we'll pick a new celebrity. James Spader is 5 minutes ago, right?
It's so 5 minutes ago.
It's Mark Valley now.
Yeah. That's right. Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com, and thanks for joining us. And my name is Rob Greenlee. Now go visit our website at webtalkradio.com and check out some of our archives. We've got articles up there. We even have a blog and RSS feeds with enclosures, so you can actually get the Web Talk Radio show delivered to you in your newsreader. So go check out webtalkradio.com. Well, up next, we have a terrific guest lined up. We're going to be speaking with Doug Kay, who's the founder and host of IT Conversations at itconversations.com. And he's also an author of a book called Loosely Coupled, The Missing Pieces of Web Services. So please welcome Doug Kay. He's on the phone with us right now, and he's going to tell us all about IT Conversations, how he built it. And we're also going to go into a fair degree of depth into podcasting and some of the changes that that's bringing to all webcasters like Web Talk Radio and the things that he's doing. Doug, welcome to the show. It's great to have you back on.
Great to be here, Rob.
Doug, it's been great to watch you build the technological wonder of IT Conversations. Why don't you tell us about the vision that you've had for that company, and why did you start it?
Well, I started about a year and a half ago. I had written a book on web services, and in the process of researching that book, I recorded interviews with many of the experts. And as I was working on the book, I realized that the people I spoke to would always know a heck of a lot more about web services than I would.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be great to be able to bring those people directly to the audience and essentially disintermediate the author. So I went back to those people and recorded some interviews with the intention of putting them on the internet. And so if you look at the first interviews on IT Conversations, they're mostly about web services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got started.
Oh, okay. Well, now are you writing all the code for the site?
I do. I write all the code, mostly in PHP.
Okay.
My wife watches me. She says, not only am I such a geek, but it's really sort of pulling together so many of the things I've done over the many years of my life. So I'm back to writing code, which is something I haven't really done much for the past 20 years.
Yeah, well, that really saves you a lot of money, I would think, in building this thing out.
It doesn't save me any sleep, though.
Yeah. What kind of unique functionality have you been playing with on your site? I know you've got RSS and enclosures, and you're kind of doing some things with, like, ratings and those kind of things. Why don't you tell me some of the visions that you had, and where'd you get the ideas to do some of those things?
Well, at this point, we've got about 225 programs in the archives in IT Conversations, and I'm producing about 4 shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
So a new visitor is somewhat overwhelmed by the volume of content. So what I wanted to do was make it so that people could find the shows that were right for them and, in fact, even keep track of what they've listened to and what they haven't. So I used the Netflix model, and I designed personal program queues so that people could put programs into a queue. They could sort them. They could check off which ones they've listened to or not. And they could actually have an RSS feed specific to their interest, based on their queue. As you mentioned, I also have a rating system, again, like Netflix or Amazon.com, and that's critical because that's really the IT Conversations community telling other members of that community what's worth listening to.
You've also been kind of moving towards basically enabling your technology to have other people create shows, which is, you know, most people, when they put together a talk show, they're basically doing all the hosting and doing pretty much all the conversations. It's kind of a new thing that you're trying to do because you're basically enabling other people to have a voice, really more so than yourself. Is that kind of your bigger vision as well?
Well, that's part of the big picture here. Again, realizing, as I did with the web services book, that there are a lot of people out there who know a whole lot more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can pick any subject area, and I can guarantee you I can find someone who knows more than
I
do. So I work with Steve Gilmore on the Gilmore Gang. I work with Ernest Miller for a show about law and IT.
Yeah.
Hallie Suit does an interview program as well. There are 2 reasons. One, again, I've got the expertise of a wider range of people. And to be honest, if I'm going to produce 4 programs a week, I can't do them all myself.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's a massive change, I think, what we're seeing with what you're doing compared to maybe even this show, is that you're really getting people to talk naturally and comfortably in, like, group settings. So you're getting, I think, more candid conversations than typically what we've seen on the major talk radio stations. I mean, even our show, I think people get on and they realize that they're on, you know, broadcast radio stations, which we're on about 11 or 12 broadcast radio stations right now, and that maybe they don't say things that they probably would if they were more in a kind of a conversational environment. It seems like you've been able to foster that. Is that something that you've noticed, or is that something that you intended to have, or it just happened by accident?
Well, I think you're right, and it comes from 2 things. One, over the past year and a half, I have done a fair amount of experimentation with format.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you don't hear my failures, but they're still online.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we did a short-form program called Check-Ins, where we had 3 or 4 segments that were 5 minutes each put together into a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
And as you suggested, a lot of people aren't comfortable.
Yeah.
If you look at the Gilmore Gang, for example, one of our more successful series, the first couple of shows were somewhat awkward. But by bringing the same people back week after week, they adjust that format, they get used to the format,
mm-hmm.
and things tend to flow much more smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like anything else. People need experience. And I think the longer format helps. It allows people, especially when I do interviews,
yeah.
it allows people to get more comfortable and sit back and and not feel rushed.
And then why don't we also talk a bit about the whole phenomenon of podcasting? Now, this is a fairly new phenomenon, and it's, I think, having a very rapid change or a rapid impact, I should say, on radio broadcasting as well as in creating audio with blogs. Is podcasting really having an impact on your show? I know it's having a significant impact on how I think about the structure and content of our show and how we present it, because it seems like that the whole podcasting trend, which is really catching on, is really more about natural conversations, more like a version of reality TV almost, or people are looking for more natural things and not the pre-produced, polished things. Is that kind of what you're seeing with that as well?
Well, certainly podcasting has, in the last 60 days, had a huge impact on us.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of traffic. But let's remember that podcasting is a new phenomenon that you and I and the audio bloggers and many other people have been producing audio content for the web for a long time.
Yeah.
Podcasting, when you get down to it, is really just a part of the distribution mechanism. So that when we would previously, the argument we used to always have would be, well, do you stream or do you offer it for download? Which is the appropriate way to do it?
That's the eternal question, at least for both of us. And I'm not really sure what the final outcome is going to be on all that.
Well, I think podcasting has really tipped the scale.
Yeah,
podcasting is in a sense its own third choice. It is download, of course, but what it is it's in its proper form. It's download all the way to the client.
Yeah,
I can imagine some point where not only do people automatically get content dumped into their MP3 players overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But once those MP3 players are a little smarter, once they're possibly actually cell phones or mobile phones.
Exactly. Once wireless becomes everywhere where we can pick up a data connection anywhere we are, you're right, it's going to change the whole broadcast model.
And what's going to happen is right now you manage your subscriptions to podcasting using a Mac or PC. But you're going to actually manage those directly from the mobile device. You're going to say, I want to get Web Talk Radio, I want to get IT Conversations and something else, I want to listen to Adam Curry or Dave Flusher, and you're going to manage that in this little mobile device. The download will still be asynchronous. It's still going to happen at off hours, and that's why it's beautiful for a mobile device, because you don't need to stream it in real time. You don't worry about the quality of the connection. It's going to happen anytime. So this really is a new platform and a new distribution model for what you and I and others have done for quite a while.
Yeah, I still hear people say that that there's a very good chance that streaming is still going to maintain some level of dominance in the mobile platform, just because of storage restraints on the mobile phones. That does stand to reason, but it also points out some needs within the mobile platform to have better bandwidth.
But let me give you an example of two things here. First of all, we now have add-in cards for mobile devices with a gigabyte of memory.
Mm-hmm.
So that argument goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, let's say I'm listening to my mobile phone, and the phone rings, and I pause.
Yeah.
Now, once I pause, you could say I'm still streaming, but in fact, I'm essentially doing time-shifted listening.
Yeah.
Because I want to pick it up where I left off. Right away, I'm into that same podcasting model.
Well, and a lot of the formats right now don't really allow for pausing or bookmarking. Those kind of phenomenons too. So there's going to be some evolution of the technology as well, I'm sure.
That's right. And that responsibility really falls to the players. The player software needs to do that.
Mm-hmm. So are you feeling any pull to have your shows basically broadcast on regular broadcast radio or on satellite radio? Or do you feel any need to kind of move in that direction?
I would say that I did as recently as 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But IT Conversations is now, although not a financial success, it certainly is a success in terms of public opinion and listenership. And at this point, I would say no. In fact, with recent developments, with Howard Stern moving satellite radio, with podcasting, I think it's going the other way. I'm actually feeling, if anything, pressure not to go broadcast.
Yeah. Well, I've been living in both worlds myself, and it seems like that all of the broadcasters out there, or at least the radio stations, whatever, are requiring content to pay for their airtime now. And it's certainly putting a financial burden on the content producer to actually pay for placement and get all the advertising and put all that together. And I think that ultimately they're going to have a hard time, I think, getting good quality content, because it's all going to be basically infomercials. And it seems like that's the direction that they're going. And I'm just not sure it's going to work. I know it's really making it difficult for me to expand my show out on broadcast.
It's a challenge. I mean, the ongoing discussion that all of us have, of course, is do we charge for content?
Yeah.
Do we have sponsorships? How do we make this work?
Exactly.
You know, what's happening at IT Conversations is that the listenership is building mm-hmm. quite a bit, and it's making the sponsorship model more viable.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have a sponsorship model, then you can essentially, you're giving your content away, which is
yeah.
what I always want to do anyway.
Sure.
But that means when I go to a distribution channel, I can give it away there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to make it obviously much easier. The key always is to make sure that you have a broad enough listener base.
Yeah.
When I started, I was focused on really IT managers and CIOs. And let's face it, there just aren't enough CIOs out there to support a very large scale sponsorship model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, it's a big challenge. I mean, even online, you know, I'm trying to sell sponsorships as well to advertisers that have primarily been buying advertising on broadcast. And, you know, if it's a technology show on broadcast, and they were very skeptical when they were looking at my show and the whole internet radio piece, you know, before they would basically be willing to jump in. They actually wanted to do tests and they wanted to do all these kind of things. And they actually wanted me to do tests, basically for free. And it basically was something, you know, I wasn't willing to do because that was basically getting them exposed to my entire audience for nothing, just so they could see if there was a response to it. And it was really a challenge, and I think that webcasters and podcasters are going to have a hard time for a while getting sponsorship. You know, I think that if they can build a big enough audience, just like what you're doing right now, and you're being successful, but not all podcasters are going to have that level of success.
One of the big challenges is working with people in traditional marketing
mm-hmm.
who expect, for example, that we're going to be able to work with registered users, that we're going to collect demographic information, we're going to have accurate reporting and come back to them and say, look, you know, we have, 25,000 males between 25 and 35. They make X dollars a year. They spend it on this and stuff.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that all of us have to adjust to.
Yeah.
RSS is anonymous,
mm-hmm.
at least for now. And downloading, you know, my most successful downloading is anonymous downloads.
Yeah.
I can count them, but I have no idea who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the producers, publishers, and the marketing people are going to have to get used to because it really is the way things are going.
Or the advertisers and the ad agencies don't really recognize downloads as being as valuable as a stream. And I think part of the reason for that is that they don't have the confidence that that download is actually being listened to, where they can actually track how many minutes that web stream broadcast was listened to because they can actually track that. Yeah, you know, I've had these conversations with many ad people, ad agencies that have contacted me, exploring the possibility of running advertising, and I always tell them that one of my growing and most successful ways of distributing my show is by download, and it seems to be growing more and more all the time, but they just don't see the big picture. I think we have a real educational challenge ahead of us to convince the marketing industry to look at downloads as that listener is making a commitment to having a relationship with that show and that there's a very high likelihood that they're going to listen to it.
Even if a relatively small percentage of those downloaders actually listen,
mm-hmm.
there's still a real model there. Think of the community newspaper that someone picks up for free.
Yeah.
You go to the coffee shop, pick up the free community newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those end up being used for nothing more than coasters.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a model that works there.
Yeah.
And I think we just have to get people to adjust it because there's a real role for that to play.
Yeah, are you seeing that that length of format is becoming longer now that things are moving towards this podcast format? One of the biggest things that I had a challenge for me when I was producing my show, because I was hearing that people have very short attention spans online and that they just don't watch long-form content just because they just don't. You know, it's like your content needs to be 5 minutes or less. But it seems like if they can get it transferred to a listening device like an iPod or whatever, that they're going to be more likely to spend more time with it because they can take it with them.
Well, that's exactly right. When the platform was the desktop or the laptop, almost nobody had the patience to listen for more than a few minutes. When people are commuting, when they're listening to it in the gym or while jogging, it's a whole different game.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we've got sort of the 30 to 55-minute window, let's say, that's going to work out pretty well there. However, what's happening now is, because of podcasting, we very quickly have created much more content than any one person can listen to.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, think of Robert Scoble out in the world of blogging. You know, yeah. Scoble's consuming, you know, well over 1,000 blogs, but he can read fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't listen fast. You can't really speed it up except with a couple of gimmicks.
Yeah.
And so how are you going to know what to listen to? Well, we're about to be competing for market share.
Yeah.
And I think the key to that is quality and making sure that whatever your length is, you deliver really superb material for that length. So if you're going to do a one-hour show, it had better be filled with a lot of good stuff.
Well, that's a fascinating question, because what qualifies as really good stuff? Is it information or is it entertainment? You know, and I think that's always been the eternal question. I know it's something I've wrestled with on our show is, you know, I can fill my show full of information, but is that going to maintain the listener's interest, or do you have to sprinkle it with a lot of entertainment and then throw in the occasional informational nugget?
And I think, again, people are experimenting with the format.
Yeah.
Look at Adam Curry again with Daily Source Code. Adam has one, maybe two or three full-length pieces of music in the show.
Yeah.
And he asks people, he says, you know, do you listen to it or do you skip through it? Do you fast forward through the music?
Mm-hmm.
At least we have the option, because, again, it's a TiVo-like experience. We're essentially skipping the commercials by skipping the songs,
oh, yeah.
if you will. And we have that option at least. You're going to see much greater variety of content in this format, because
oh, yeah.
people will have the opportunity to experiment.
And one thing that I'm really seeing a lot of pull on right now is downloads is becoming something that's paid for more all the time. I know a lot of the distribution of my show right now on a download basis is going into networks that are forming that are charging a subscription for access to an aggregation of content. You know, there's the Audible folks, there's the Audio Feast folks as well that are making aggregation of lots of content available and then charging like $49 a year. There's BitPass out there that's also giving technology out there to enable paying for downloads too. And I think it's one question that content producers are going to be faced with is, do I offer a ad-free version of our show or a sponsorship-free version of the show for a paid model and then maybe offer a sponsor version for free? I don't know. What's your take on that?
I think initially you're going to see two parallel universes. If you look at Audible, for example, why has Audible been successful? It's a couple of reasons. One is they've aggregated a lot of content,
mm-hmm.
audiobooks, NPR shows, and so forth. But they also did an initial job of cracking the user interface and making it reasonably simple to download this material, get it into an iPod, and take it on a trip or burn it onto a CD.
Yeah.
All of that material, or most of that, has some digital rights management issues.
Correct.
And DRM is the big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
What you see in the iPodder community is the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You have people like me and others who are producing content that is either issued under a Creative Commons license or mm-hmm. has essentially no copyright or has copyright, but it has no license issue whatsoever. Not only that, but in the iPodder community, the user interface is not only much easier, it's invisible.
Mm-hmm.
You just subscribe and the content appears. So the iPod community has leapfrogged Audible mm-hmm. in terms of ease of use.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree.
And so you've got people who are looking at this and say, well, why should, if I want to listen to Terry Gross on NPR, why should I pay Audible?
Mm-hmm.
If I can somehow get it, you know, there are a lot of tools. You've talked about them on your show.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the tools for recording radio, making it into MP3s, putting it onto an iPod, can do that. Why should I spend $14.95 a month with Audible?
Replay radio is the one that comes to mind, that you can actually record right off of your stereo system, or you can record off of a web stream.
And then in Walt Mossberg's column this week, I think he talked about Radio Shark.
Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing, yeah.
Right. So right now, as I say, I see two parallel universes evolving where you have content that is produced under Creative Commons or even more liberal licensing,
mm-hmm.
an iPod that's easy to use, that's readily available, and then you still have DRM-managed content with the Audibles of the world. Where it goes after this period of diverging universes, I'm not sure. Do they converge? Does one universe wipe out the other? Don't know. Too early.
I mean, it certainly is early, but it's also something that's going to be growing fast, and it's going to follow broadband. I know the growth of our shows has probably followed the growth of broadband adoption. I'm getting listeners from all over the world listening to our show. Broadband is growing very rapidly, and wireless broadband is growing very rapidly overseas, so it's something that's going to help shows that are online that maybe have a worldwide appeal because maybe they're technology right now, but over time, other types of shows, I know I'm working with a show right now that talks about martial arts, those kind of things, And he has listeners all over the world that, that listen to martial arts. So it's not necessarily all geeks that are starting to take advantage of this medium. And I think we're going to see other types of shows other than the type of shows that we produce, which are more technology-driven topics, start to find a place.
And the key here is something like iPotter getting beyond the geek world. So once the usability issues are solved and once, you know, non-geeks can do this, yeah. And I think we really are there. We just haven't gotten the word out yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, word's spreading pretty fast from what I'm seeing. Yeah,
yeah, then again, you can have your martial arts show. You can have your gardening show. You can have everything because, let's face it, iPods are usable by anybody. PCs are generally usable by anybody. And once you marry these two in the iPod or fashion, then this is as easy to use as your car radio.
Yeah, it certainly is. Why don't you tell me what you guys have planned for your show here coming up? Are you going to be at some new events that you're going to be live streaming from?
Well, we do have one coming up. We're going to an event called PopTech held in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have the dates in front of me, but I think it's in about 2 weeks. Actually, yeah, it's almost exactly 2 weeks from now. We'll be streaming that live as well as bringing that to you on demand. We still have a lot of the presentations from GnomeDex 4.0 to come out. They'll be coming out over the next few weeks. We'll be bringing you content, hopefully, from Digital ID World, held in Colorado at the end of October. So we've got an ongoing stream, if you will, of live conferences. But again, what's interesting there is, although doing the conferences is a lot of fun and we get a lot of buzz, the live stream is listened to by far fewer users than the downloads that follow.
On demand.
Yeah, on demand. And let's face it, who wants to sit down and listen to a conference at their desk when they have a job to do?
Yeah.
You know, you can't do that. You have to work. You get to get paid. You can absorb this, again, in a time-shifted manner when it's more convenient for you.
So why is it that you are doing these conferences live then?
A lot of reasons. So GnomeDex 4 was a heck of a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
We got to meet so many of the people who are our listeners. We got good feedback from them. We got good advice. Made a lot of new contacts.
Yeah.
And it's part of the buzz. GnomeDex was a show, by geeks for geeks.
Yeah.
And thanks to Chris Perillo over there, IT Conversations really was a significant part of the event.
Sure.
And that's an increasing phenomenon.
So, do you think doing your show live creates better content?
No, I would say probably the opposite.
Just the opposite? Okay.
Yeah. I think, a show like yours where you can take the time to edit and clean it up, it's part of the professional process. But, it's the difference between you don't do football that way. You do football as a live event because there's some energy involved.
Sure.
And you want to capture that energy.
I've wrestled with the whole concept for years because we actually started doing our show for a year or so live in a broadcast radio station. And we just found that I had too many guests that forgot to call in, those kind of things. And it just became kind of a challenge technologically to keep things together and to present a really good show. So it really pulled it back into our own studio, kind of like, you're doing the same thing. You're just operating with equipment in your home and using the technology and the tools out there. And I've been doing it for 6 years, and I know you've been doing it for what, coming up on, aren't you doing it for 2 years now?
A year and a half.
Year and a half, yeah. So time flies.
It does. And, I think, again, as all of us have to compete for market share, which is a new phenomenon. Let's face it, in the early days of this, and you're one of the pioneers, in the early days, we weren't competing for market share. We were just trying to get anybody to listen to us at all.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what really kept me in the broadcast radio side, is because it got me a lot of credibility with guests. I mean, I was able to get guests on my show just being on one radio station that I would not have been able to get if I was just an internet webcast.
Well, and that's, to be honest, that's something I'm really enjoying, which is now with Sess of IT Conversations,
yeah.
There isn't any I can't get.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's a thrill for me, to be able to call up and to have people say, oh, I know of your show. I said,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
Know?
Yeah.
But I do think that as the competition now increases for this, which is, of course, very exciting because that means it's being accepted, all of us are going to have to work on the quality.
Mm-hmm.
And people like you who are taking the time to edit and trim the show, hopefully you'll shorten this interview, but people who do that are going to be performing an important function for the audience because there are only so many one-hour rambles that I or somebody else can listen to.
Yeah,
and I think there's going to be a limit to how many one-hour rambles are going to be going to succeed out there.
Yeah, well, what I'm actually going to do with this conversation is we actually have so many different distribution platforms that we're working on, whether it be broadcast radio, it's up on satellite, or just streaming or download, whatever, that we can create different versions of our show. We actually even make a 30-minute version of our show that actually is more condensed. I'm doing like a 30-minute interview with you, but that's not to say that the 30 minutes is going to go on the broadcast radio's piece. But the 30 minutes can go on the, or most of the 30 minutes can go on the streaming or download piece.
And as both of us know, you will spend a lot more than 30 minutes in post-production on this interview.
Oh, yeah. No question.
And that investment that you make is what differentiates you from the live show or the one-hour ramble or the 30-minute mm-hmm. ramble. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's going to be appreciated by the audience. The audience is going to say, I don't have time. I want a certain amount of condensation, not because I don't want all the information, but I want someone to take out the garbage, you know, and give me what's important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question that there's an advantage. There's a significant investment in time. You're exactly right. I know. Well, Doug, it was great to speak with you.
Rob, great to speak with you, too. Thank you very much.
And I know I had you on the show a couple of years ago talking about your book that you wrote.
That was my web hosting book. That was number one. Yeah.
And it's been phenomenal to watch you build the IT Conversations platform at itconversations.com. And we wish you the most luck.
And I wish you luck too, Rob. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thanks, Doug.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.